Thank you for joining us, everyone, for another episode of Creatives Chat. Episode 39.
After Show Convo.
Featuring Gary Barquette and Sean Jones. Join us as we chat about who knows what. Our show shall begin now. Streaming from Retro Earth Studio and brought to you by
WeAreHistorically.com, Conscious Human Apparel, and
Learn to Play Jazz Piano Like a Pro by a Pro with Jazz Piano Pro Essentials at jazzpianopro.com.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on Creatives Chat. Hi, I'm Rusty.
I'm Peter.
And Peter, why don't you tell our viewers who we have lined up for our show today?
Ooh, Rusty, we have a special. We're bringing two guests on today. We have a loan officer and a financial advisor here to dive into the world of financial literacy and really, who knows what else. Let's welcome Gary and Sean. You know, you guys both touched on something that I find really pivotal, and it's a point of courage where you have to kind of address that you don't know something. And it's, you know, it comes into like maturity because you have to have the accountability to see where your flaws are at. Like, what gave you guys the courage to really jump all in and educate yourself on these things?
For me, just like I have goals, like really sitting down and having to go through the process myself, and Ryan, who is my advisor, sitting down and asking me, like, where do you see yourself in a year, in 3, in 10, you know, and then talking about, like, what's retirement look like for you? And then, like, really sitting down and showing me, like, what the numbers look like, and then asking me, like, what are you currently doing? And it's like, well, yeah. Shit, I need to figure, you know, I need to be making some moves. I need to be figuring this stuff out. And so, like, for those that will reach out to me, I've gone through the process as well, and I'm going through the process. So that's kind of really cool, is just kind of growing with the clients as I'm kind of going through the process right with them. Yeah.
Ooh, it's powerful. Yeah, what about yourself, Gary? What was powerful. Your moment of just like, ah?
It's my why, straight up. And my why, it goes hand in hand with me just wanting more in life and wanting choices in life. Like, there's a lot of experiences that I want to create. I realized at a young age that life was so much more than just going to work and living to work and then working to die. Like, I was just like, you know what? Like, I don't want to live like that, man. Like, if I need to put myself out there and take some risk and gamble on myself, like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to live the life that I want to live. But you got to have purpose. You got to understand what it is you're trying to accomplish. You got to have a vision for what it is you're trying to do and how you're trying to live. You know, I want to be able to create this experience for my kids where they don't have to worry about too much. They can just show up and do their best. And that's all I want them to do. If you just show up and do your best, I'm going to provide everything else you need. I'm going to provide the playbook. I'm going to provide the blueprint, the stability, the support. I just want you to show up, have fun, and do your absolute best. And if you can do that, then I got everything else covered. And that's the mentality that I go into everything with. And I also have siblings that, you know, we have different moms. I'm the only child from my mom. And then I have siblings who have, there's two other moms involved. And I always wish that we were closer. I always wish we could spend more time together. We grew up in different households. So part of my why too is to be able to create this environment and this means where I can provide for them, and I can create this environment of us being together and doing things together. And we can go on vacation together. We can enjoy, I can go fly out to them anytime I want, and having that freedom and that flexibility to do that. So, you know, it comes back to my family and who I am as an individual, but my why is that's what is going to, you know, keep my foot on the gas no matter what.
Ooh. Oh, you guys, this is great. And I think that right there is enough inspiration for people to really kind of take the charge and educate themselves on this incredibly important industry. And I mean, there really is so much opportunity. And I think that's probably the biggest misconception that I found that people have with capitalism, is they think capitalism is this real evil system. It's like, yeah, we know we have an oligarchy in place for the big businesses, but like, you can really utilize capitalism to make jumps and waves in life. And it's really easy. Like, I always pitch people, like, if you really have like your own like business, if you have your own little arts or trade, open an LLC. Hell, you don't even really need to have like a specific business in mind to open up an LLC, but right there, right there, you have a tax, you have tax breaks. Instantly.
Tax breaks, business line of credit, another, like, there's a lot of things. We can go on. Yeah.
Good point.
Well, what would be your biggest advice for people that are like curious or kind of like hesitant for like creating an LLC? Like, what would be like your elevator pitch of being like why every person should have an LLC, even if you don't really want to have a business in the long run?
Well, when you start getting to certain tax brackets, one, there's a way, because right now, I assume all of this conversation could open up an IRA. But when you start making over 200 or certain amount, when you start making over that and annually, you are no longer eligible to contribute to an IRA account. All right. Mm-hmm. But if you have an LLC, there's loopholes around that. All right. There's also, you know, loopholes with the taxes and about, you know, how much you're paying yourself. There's also, again, I brought it up briefly, but the business line of credit, then also me having an LLC and say, me and Peter go out to lunch. Shit. Excuse me. I'm putting it on the car, you know, and I'm putting everything on the car, you know, and at the end of the year, I'm telling my tax lady that, hey, me and Peter had lunch. And now also I'm able to track by having the LLC and then having the EIN number, I'm also able to track everything very, very precisely, which is something I needed to do a much better job. And this year, I've kind of been awakened to that, you know, having sat down with my tax lady and she's like, okay, yeah, you said this, but where's the proof? You know, like, can you validate that you said you spent $200 on weight equipment? You know, and it's like, yeah, like, you know, I'm just used to doing tackles at TurboTax, you know, where you just say, you know, $200 on my dumbbells, you know, that's what I did. And so it will help you with just keeping everything streamlined and everything organized. And there's a bunch of loopholes and a bunch of things you can tap into by having an LLC.
But I'll just base it off of my you know, small, limited, you know, personal experience that I have with it. So I've owned an LLC since 2018. And it's kind of just for me personally, it's been sitting there. And just like I was talking about earlier, that entrepreneurial mindset, it's been sitting there for when I need it one day. And at first, you know, we were kind of making a stance, we were doing some things. But as I got to the point where I realized I need to be able to fund my dreams myself, and I'm going to figure out a way to do that. That's kind of why I'm going down this path too, is being able to fund my dreams. So in my mind, I still have that LLC in place. And when the time is right, I'm going to put it to use. It's already taken care of. It's already got the name, you know, taken care of. I don't got to worry about the copyright, anything like that. So for me, it's really just sitting there as a placeholder for when I do get that money and I get that ability and that time and that freedom, I'll be able to put some more things in place. And it doesn't cost me anything to run right now. I do get calls from the IRS like, hey, you know, did you guys make any money this quarter? No, we didn't make any money. Or, you know, we didn't actually. We didn't really, you know, do anything in that realm. But when we do start making money, then again, it's clean. It's going to be clean money. That's already, you know, it's going to be clean
very
money.
Important to specify that, folks.
It's clean important, money. Right? It's going to be clean money that's taken through a business. And I'll be able to, again, utilize some of those benefits that Sean was talking about, amongst other things too. So that's just the kind of plain, you know, simple version.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. This is like, I think people should start, I want to dive into this more, but just leveraging, I know they always tell you about staying out of debt. Like don't accrue debt, but there's a lot of things I've been learning about leveraging credit. And so like, I just kind of gone through the process of getting the business account, getting the EIN number, getting my own checking account and all that good stuff. And just seeing like, wow, I can have access to $5,000 of capital, you know. And think about it, if you're a business owner, if, you know, if you're not having to come out of pocket for the, you know, for the basketball or the sweaters or the training equipment or, you know, the gym space, et cetera. And you can kind of come up with that in to start your endeavor. You know, you're going to be in a great, an awesome position and also be able to do a lot of things that you may have not been able to do. And that was all accessible from you getting an LLC, which then allows you to get an EIN number and all that stuff.
And then we're not even talking about, like, there's so many different things you can do in terms of just nowadays, in terms of like Amazon Marketplace, just like have now being official seller on Amazon with your LLC. You have now the window opened up for opportunity in terms of grants. And there's a lot of grant money out there, folks. And these are things that I find that, you know, when you're actually able to have these types of, you know, like financial oriented conversations with people. And again, we're speaking very simple with everything we're talking about. Like, it starts to I think give people hope that it's like, yeah, your dream isn't as far away as you think it is. you know, those people that are selling stuff on Etsy, those people that are just like doing, like literally, I know a few people that like, they're just doing hair on the side. Like, yo, you get an LLC that it comes in like, oh, lunch meeting, business trip. I could find a million excuses to make anything a business trip.
Facts.
Like,
that's a fact though. Like all those people getting under the table, like doing under the table haircuts, like definitely should get an LLC. You're right, Peter. Like all the travel, especially if you're doing home calls, you know, like
your rent, your utilities, yeah. That's all business expenses.
Facts.
And I'm gonna tell you guys straight up, I'm throwing this out there. Do not become a barber who gets money under the table and who never, you know, does it legally, because you're going to set yourself, if that's your only stream of income, you are going to disqualify yourself from being able to get a home loan. And I want people to understand that. And I've seen the situation come up, because if you're not paying tax on your money, we're not going to use that money to qualify you. That is not valid money in our eyes. So I'm just, you know, as far as when you think about it from a lender standpoint, they want to be able to verify that money and know that it's likely to continue and that it's consistent. And again, that you're paying taxes on it. So I'm not trying to harp on nobody or anything like that. I'm just saying, do not set yourself back, because I've seen it multiple times. And when people try to come to me to get qualified for a loan, I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to get some job experience, because that doesn't count, you know, in our eyes. And that's just the reality of it. So, you know, it's one thing to have a side hustle, and you want that to be your side hustle, do you on the taxes thing. But if you want to use that money to qualify, then pay taxes on it, and AKA get an LLC or get licensed.
Hell yeah. Like, just to like piggyback on that, like that's kind of one reason. Another reason why sitting down with an advisor is really good, because when you sit down with the loan officer who's sitting down and about to write off or give you access to $500,000, $1 million of capital, they're going to look through everything. Isn't that right, Gary?
We're checking bank statements.
They're checking everything. And so it's to have an advisor in your corner who's like, has all your, you know, has your money in your brokerage, knows exactly how much is in it, knows that, you know, you have the money that he knows the amount that you're contributing to your 401k. He knows your insurance and your cash value, you know, amounts that's in there. You know, he can help you direct, you know, your W-2 and your tax documents to Gary, et cetera. So it's a nice having an advisor, because now all that stuff is in one spot. And then kind of going on that work history thing, it is big going into the position that me and Gary are in. You're just knowing that I need to have 2 years of work history to be eligible for a home loan. And just something I didn't know before I jumped. I didn't know that when I jumped into this role, being an entrepreneur, you have to have, again, the loan officer is granting you $500,000 or large amounts of money. So it only makes sense that they want to be secure that, you know, you have some stability. But being an entrepreneur, being the fact that I'm not a W-2 or sole proprietor, I'm in that position. And so, when I met with Gary, that was also one of the reasons I was excited too. I'm like, oh, Gary, we definitely need to be talking about getting my loan approved. Let's go. You know, I'm ready. Let's do this, you know. And so I was a little disappointed to find out that, you know, me being a sole proprietor, unless I had like a, you know, my gym career going on the side at a W-2, employee, I'm not eligible to be considered for a loan until I have the 2 years of work eligible or of work history built up.
Yep.
Nuggets of wisdom. That's super important, and I think that just pivots it to another level of just understanding that if you really want to do it right, if you have like a pipe that's busted, you get a plumber. You know, if you have a heart problem, you go to a cardiologist. Like when we have issues in our lives, when we have these opportunities to really utilize someone's skill set, we hire them. We know that that's what we hire them. So why not explore the realm of money management? Mm-hmm. Like how many people can say that like they're good with money? Like if you're one of those people that's always like scrapping by for your change to pay your coffee or whatever, it's like, you probably should take a break and recognize, and it comes back to that conscious choices point, Gary, where it's just like, are you making conscious choices with your money? Like, do you know the cause and effect of this investment or this perk or, you know, whatever asset you want to have? Is it going to be an asset or liability down the line? Like,
period.
There's so much about it.
Yeah, one of these quotes I heard off of a book, Total Money Makeover, pretty popular financial book that probably a good amount of people have heard of, but it's by Dave Ramsey. And one of the quotes he said that stuck with me was, don't wonder where your money went. Know exactly where it's going. And that stuck with me because it's so true. Because how many times do we look at our bank account and be like, dang, $200 in the checking? I swear I just got paid last Friday. Like, where did that go? And then you just kind of brush it off, right? No, like know exactly where your money is going. And you start having that control and that ability to just make the conscious choices and understanding like, okay, like I said, like I made that small account where I started off with saving $25 a month. And like I said, years later, it accumulated to, you know, $7,000 of money that I didn't use. I bought my laptop with it. So it would even be more money than that. But I've already, and here's another concept. I love paying myself. You know, I can text my financial advisor right now and be like, hey, could you slide $1,000 in my checking account? I'm trying to get paid this Friday. Boom. He can slide $1,000 into my checking account. I just paid myself technically. Now it's my own money, but it still is in a different account. So it feels like I'm paying myself. Little stuff like that. Like it's just very empowering when it comes to the financial management.
No, I love that. You know, it comes back to that point of, you know, the why of what you want to do with your life. How are you going to make it happen? And money is involved with everything. Like I'm a big person where it's like, I don't really have any attachments to money. I have no problem spending stuff. I have no problem investing that. I don't care about it, but I do understand that it's a means of how we get stuff done in this world. And if you don't have your own finances and your own direction where you want to take that money, like you're just literally, you're paying for someone else's dream. And I think that's the most heartbreaking stuff is like, there's so many kids out there. It's like, if I would have known the information now when I was like 12, like I've been making money and working since I was like 13. Like I've been hustling on the playground, like selling gel pen tattoos in elementary school. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and what I realized, I can't remember the name of the advisor who I was listening to. He has this channel that I watch, and he was breaking it down like how you can become a millionaire just through, like, can't remember which IRA form it was, like a Roth or not, but it was like
Roth,
just
probably.
Like just a thousand a year and just have that accumulate. And just like by the time you're like 35 or like by the time you're actually towards retirement.
Yeah. By the time
you're 60, you got at least a mil.
Yeah. Facts.
Facts. If I would know that, man.
The Compound Effect. That's another book I would recommend. The Compound Effect. It made me think of that. Yep. That's a big, big one.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we're not even getting into the realm right now where it's like we're going to be thinking of how things are going to change in terms of the central banking systems. Like with that changing in terms of crypto getting involved and all these different assets that are going to be available too, it's like that's adding its own wheelhouse on top of an already massive industry. That's like, to me.
Yeah, crypto is crazy. What's your thoughts on crypto?
Oh, what are my thoughts on crypto? I love it. So diving into the cryptos, the one thing that I find is the way the world is changing, we really are moving towards decentralization, I think. And I look at like Nigeria right now. They've been doing what we've been doing, where has just been pushing zeros at the end of it, increasing the debt, you know, and pumping out money that's just going to drop its value at one point. And because people were having such issues with their dollar or with their version of the dollar crashing, whatever their currency is, I can't remember, they actually started to transition and do more like peer-to-peer exchanging of cryptos. And their government's freaking out, like full-blown freaking out, because they tried to ban it and people are just like, nah, we're just going to do our own thing. And that's the future that I see with crypto, is that it's like, it really does, it takes like what we're talking about in this like financial empowerment and is like on steroids.
My thing though, Peter, with that is like, in order for it to crypto to boom, people got to be willing to accept it as freaking as currency. Like,
yeah.
I, as a store owner, I got to be able to spend it, you know? And so that's going to be the next step. Yeah, I feel like that's what they're going towards, but I don't think, I mean, it's going to, I watch a lot of, like, you know, Netflix shows with drugs, and, you know, bang, bang. But like my crime, my criminal mind, my criminal mind is like, there's going to be no way. It's going to be really tough for them to regulate that. And that's honestly why it's not like in 100% circulation now.
True.
Is that it's like the government wants to get their tax. They need to get their moolah. And like, this is definitely a loophole for them to get around whoever is dealing in crypto, the people that are dealing in the bigger dollars, you know, that's what they want to do, start spending crypto. I feel like once they figure out a way to tax it, yeah. But
that's a good point. Really, really good point.
I think it's, Well, I see it like the way I see it is we're at that weird position where I feel like this is our generation's chance to kind of hop on to like Amazon or Microsoft stock before it's anything. Mm. And that's like, and I think one of the things we're seeing now, like at least Bitcoin, is seeing, you know, the big wigs like Elon Musk and all these big companies and management groups buying like millions of dollars worth of like Bitcoin and Ethereum and all these different cryptos. Is the financial industry, the way I see it, is that it's getting set up to accept cryptos because it's going to be the easiest doing things. Like the potential of cryptocurrencies is, instead of having like a bank transfer where it's like, oh, this is going to take like 3-4 days to process, it's instantaneous. And yeah, that's the stuff where I find is like, dude, there's a lot of potential with this. And in terms of getting like the small coins that are going to eventually boom, you know, you can do your research and you can find some good stuff right now. Like I think my rate of return right now, I'm at, I think like almost 20x my investments.
Ooh.
That's awesome.
And that's just like at a dip right now. Wow. It was higher like a few days ago, but that's the thing right there where it's just like, it's just continuing to like, I don't know. Again, like I picture yeah, it as like, it yo, is, do your research awesome. On it's it. It's
constantly
look into
going
it.
Up. It is so volatile and it's constantly going up. I doubt, like, who's to say that we'll have a crash, but you know, it is, honestly, it's in competition with the US dollar. And so yeah,
that's crazy.
Dollar is
that's crazy. It sounds like I need to make some investments.
Yeah, the dollar is shitty right now. And so it's not worth a lot. And so man, it is scary. It's crazy. You know, you definitely should have some money in some type of Bitcoin. If Bitcoin scares you, maybe get an index fund or get an ETF. Where it's like basically a multitude of funds that are all dealing in Bitcoin, small percentages of them inside that house. You know, maybe that's something that's more comfortable for you. That's more comfortable for me, to be honest. And so, you know, but there's things out there to get your hands into that pool. But yeah, I don't know, Peter. Like, I think it's scary stuff because it is scary stuff because, I mean, what is it? The dollar's backed by gold, right? The gold that's supposedly at the White House in the Treasury.
Yeah, backed by gold.
Yeah.
I like the quotations.
Well, I mean, that's what they've been telling us. I think that's right there is, like, I think when you start to understand the financial industry, you realize, like, oh, wow, this is pretty corrupt, too. Like, we bring back to the GameStop thing. And just, like, the fact that people short stocks and make bets on stocks and put like millions in that can return billions, like, you know, and the fact that just regular retailers could figure that out and be like, oh, this one's shorted, well, let's bump this price up, then they lose, like, that to me is like the power of financial literacy. It's like, we could really break the market. Like, we could already break the banking system if we really wanted to. Like, everyone go withdraw all your cash from the banks.
Oh, they can't even have the capacity. I was just watching Ozark and he tried to get his 6 million out the account. They were like, you don't understand, we don't literally have your 6 million. He was like, wait a damn second, this is my money. And he knew the whole system. But just real quick, like, it's like, that is a good point. Like, you try to go withdraw your whole savings account and they're saying that they don't have the cash on
the
hand.
Bank is playing around with your money, bro.
Wait a second. Yeah, wait, what?
They're manipulating your money in the market, you know, and that's how, it's crazy to think, but that's how insurance companies operate too. And that's how we're able to promise our returns and our returns on cash value, life insurance, and death benefits. And honestly, that's how Northwestern Mutual also does a lot of its, can promise a lot of returns on the brokerage side as well, is that we're able to pull together, which is how funds work, pull together a bunch of people's funds, and with more capital, you're able to leverage and you have more leverage. And that's something I also wanted to touch on, is that some of these, like, there are some things where it's like, you know, there's no barrier of entry. You only need $1 or $5 to kind of participate. But now in like Bitcoin, yeah, you can put $1 into Bitcoin. I'm not going to get you much, you know, but consecutively and consistently, yeah, that'll add up to something. But there's a lot of things now where you need capital. You need capital to even be in the game. Mm-hmm. And so like finding something, like, yeah, I'm all for the entrepreneur lifestyle, all for the hustle, but make sure that you're doing something that's bringing you some capital, you know, because that's ultimately what we need to be able to even be playing in the game. You got to have some funds.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what are your guys' thoughts on, because I know that they're doing a similar aspect of like shorting stocks, or at least shorting like precious metal contracts. Like that's another kind of like volatile industry. Like what are your guys' ideas or perspectives on just like precious metals or having some type of like commodity that's like tradable in physical like hand?
I haven't put much thought into that, honestly. Like that's something I would say is a little bit beyond my expertise as far as, because when it comes to investing, I really have leaned on my financial advisor just because it's one of those things that I was like, do I want to take the time and energy to really dive into this? Not really, but it's important. And I do understand that. And it's something that I'm continuing to you know, spend a little bit of time gaining knowledge on, but it's not something I've really like dove in or committed to. So that might be a Sean Jones expertise question.
Yeah. I mean, with commodities, I think with anything, like I'll just lean back to just being diversified and whatever, having a diversified portfolio. Like right now, though, I definitely think green is big. Like with people would say that with Biden, I've been doing some reading with Biden being in president, that, you know, him being someone that's leaning to the left, it's going to be a lot of incentives for people that operate in green technology. And so, and there's a lot of money circulating from the government, again, incentivizing people to operate in green technology. So I think definitely like definitely gold, green energy, things like that are definitely going to be booming markets. But at the end of the day, we would probably just, that question we asked in the meeting would probably just get diverted to talking about just, we need to be diversified. We need to have some of our money here, some of our money there, some of our money in large caps, small caps, some of our money in commodities, you know, some of our money, you know, in REITs, you know, in real estate, just diversifying and capitalizing, trying to have a hand in the pot in all these different buckets, in all the different eight asset classes. And again, if say one crashes, you know, we're not, you know, all our eggs aren't in one basket, you know. Yeah. And at the same time, if one's booming, we can always be more strategic. But that's kind of where it comes, where it's nice to have someone who's managing it actively, like an active managed portfolio. That's why a lot of people will lean towards a fund. Some people are not a lot, but some of the people that I talk to, they like to, when I explain the difference between what they're doing currently with their Robinhood, Dash, buying individual stocks, as opposed to what they could be doing with a fund or with a mutual fund, with a portfolio designed by someone, by a professional. They see the advantage of one, not having to wake up every morning or look at it daily, but also knowing that the professional is constantly looking at charts, designing the portfolio and making sure that a certain amount of percentage of we have percentages of, you know, of our investment in certain markets that are booming, studying when the boom is happening, studying when the pull, and he's looking at that daily. That's his 9 to 5. And so I think like funds are very strategic. I like it's fun messing around with Stash and Robinhood and doing your own individual investing, but the return, like I probably shouldn't say it, but I was just looking at some funds earlier, just like some aggressive funds, which would be again higher fees, meaning more aggressive funds with a higher return typically have higher fees. All right. Yeah. But some of these funds I've been seeing, you know, getting 50 to 60% return on the year. And that's just a professionally managed fund, you know, and then average returns for 10 years, you know, something like, you know, 10 to 15%. But again, last year with the volatility and what's been happening in the market, just a great return for a lot of these funds. And again, professionally managed, someone that's looking at it daily. And so diversify, I would say to you, to your answer, Peter, like diversification, like, yes, commodity, dope. A lot of like, whatever you're investing in, read up on it, like do some research, know the company, what is their product? What are they selling? Who are they selling to? You know, but at the end of the day, I think diversification is key. And then accumulating shares, like when you're buying individual stock, like, again, I could go buy a portion of an Amazon stock. That's cool. But like Amazon stock right now is like $400, or it's more than that, right? What is it now? $350, something crazy. And so, you know, hopefully one day I'll be able to drop $1,000, you know, just say, buying 20, 30 Amazon stocks, you know, whatever the cost is. But at this point, I don't have much leverage by buying 5% in Amazon stock. So again, accumulating shares, looking for companies that you feel like have a large runway for growth, and getting in there when it's inexpensive, but being in a position where you can buy a lot of shares to really capitalize on the growth.
Well, I just think that's an incredible point right there too, though, that you touched on, is the kind of strategic research aspect of it. It's like, if you don't have the time, you don't have the freedom to like look into these things and kind of like make those educated choices, you got to find someone that you know that you can trust that does, that it, that that is their 9 to 5, that they're looking at the charts, looking at the dips, look at the pumps.
Facts.
Like, yeah.
But again, it's so fascinating. It's just like, why are so many people discouraged when they think of like financial advisor? Because I know my own like kind of like tepidness to kind of even like opening this wheelhouse and conversations with people was just like, oh, do I trust them looking at my like my money? Like, do I trust, like, what are they going to do with my money? Like, how do I feel about that? So like, in terms of breaking the ice in that sense, like, what would be your kind of like elevator pitch of like why you need to see a financial advisor right now? Because it sounds like both your guys' life was like incredibly pivoted, and you took that next step in leveling up because you met with one.
Mm-hmm.
So who wants to take that one away first?
I've been talking for a while, Gary. You know.
Mine is for me, it's real simple. It's if you know better, you do better. You know, if you know more, it just all comes back to that word consciousness. I'm a conscious person. I'm all about awareness. And I feel like once you know, you have the choice to make the right decision. Like, you have the choice to understand, like why sit back and hope that your finances will be in order one day? Like, why sit back and be like, well, I just hope in 10 years I'll be able to save $10,000. Well, how about let's talk about a freaking game plan and some goals and some you know, stepping stones to hit to be able to get there. You know, just like Sean said, like, if you're making money, it doesn't matter how much money you make. And this is a conversation that I had with my real estate agent early on. Like, people think, oh, I got to be making six figures before I could buy a house, or I got to be making $75,000 before I buy a house. And that is completely not true. You have to find your means to get your foot into the door. You can make, there's people that, and it's all about your expenses, right? It's about how much money you spend versus how much money you make. Just like Sean was talking about earlier, you can make $200,000 a year, but if you're spending $150,000 on it, then you're broke just like the next person. You may be trying to maintain a certain type of lifestyle, but I know people that only make $50,000 a year, but they're saving money every single year. So it's really about the strategy and the approach and being realistic with yourself in terms of what you need to do to create that path and that game plan to get what you want. So for me, like I said, it's simple. It's, if you're not going to take that conscious time and effort, like, just like you said, Peter, to do your research and really dabble into things, and, you know, just for an example, looking at the charts and paying attention, then get a financial expert or somebody that will, and that you're going to, you know, pay to do that, because it's worth the investment. You got to understand the return on investment. And to me, it's invaluable. Like, I never would regret me going down that path of getting a financial advisor at 22. Like I said, it was one of the smartest things I did. And it's really set me up for success for the long haul. So it's a no-brainer for me. It's really a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's a good question, Peter. And I think the tepidness, a lot of people are like tepid when it's when we start having this conversation. And I try to alleviate that by, one, for me, like, being for me, in any situation that's like, we're eventually a transaction is going to happen, I want to know, like, what's the cost? And so, like, I feel like I don't ever want to come off like as a car salesman, like, you know, like I'm trying to finesse you. So I like to be really transparent on what's the fees. And ideally, when on the investment side, we want to make sure that we're getting the greatest return on investment with the least fees possible, you know, and that's how we get compensated on the back end, is the fee in. And then on the defensive planning side, making sure I establish, like, this is how we get compensated on that end too, is if you were to move forward with any of the defensive planning strategies with the life insurance or with the disability insurance. And then just explanation, doing my best to explain it, you know, explain why you need it. But understanding that one of the reasons why I like the opportunity with Northwestern Mutual is that there's no barrier of entry for a lot of these, for a lot of these investment vehicles, for the conversation. So we sit down and we have free consultations with everyone that we speak with. And you, from that consultation, you walk away with a strategic plan, regardless if you move forward with any of the investments or any of the defensive strategies that we recommended. You walk away with, hey, this is kind of where my goals are. This is the, what I'm the difference or what's missing, what I need to start implementing in my daily strategy. If I want to move forward with any of these recommendations, I can do so with Sean or the team. Regardless, I walk away with this piece of paper, with this physical strategy to move forward. And so that's kind of the cool part about why I like the firm that I'm with, is that like, you don't have to come in the door with $5,000. You know, you don't have to like invest, you don't have to, you know, be investing $100,000 with me to be having a conversation. And so, which is cool. I can talk to any and everyone, you know? And so that's kind of how we try to, or how the team tries to alleviate the tepidness. And Gary talked about it too, just making sure, like, if you're looking for an advisor, like someone that you trust, someone that, you know, that gets it, that get that willing to get the mission or get your mission. So,
That's incredibly important. And I think one thing that I do want to let people know as well is this isn't just like a thing that people use starting off. Like my brother, my second oldest brother, he started off same thing, you know, just like in that financial industry, you know, just doing loans and different insurance aspects. But he now does wealth management, where it's like you have to pretty much be like a multimillionaire to work with him. Like, it doesn't stop, folks, you know, like to the listeners, like, you know, that's the thing about the, you know, if you really want to think rich, think poor, the rich continue to think, okay, well, how can I continue to make these gains? What else can I continue to diversify my portfolio? Like, how can I set up my family for this and this and this? And like, and there's so many aspects that I love about this app, the concept of like legacy and like generational wealth and happiness and just like incorporating your family. This is really how you uplift everybody in your circle. And, you know, Sean, I actually think you posted about it. I saw it was like, are people in your circle talking about finances? And if they are, you should probably find a different circle. And like, to me, that was so important, because I'm like, it really is a community thing. And like, I know community is kind of big with both of you guys. So in terms of like establishing like a healthy, financially literate community, like, how can we change our culture? How can we help our people? How can we uplift everyone in this sense of like financial empowerment? Like, what are some strategies that you like to use, or what are some ideas you may have for the future? I know I got a few, but.
Oh man, more conversations like this, you know, more conversations like this. There's a lot of people out there, like similar to you, that have podcasts and YouTubes, you know, a lot of books, you know, if you, again, if you're not a reader, a lot of YouTubes, things out there to just get knowledge and again, making it sexy. Like, and I feel like getting into this realm, you know, you kind of get misconstrued thinking that anyone that deals with money is dressed in a suit and tie, like anyone that's in that realm of finances, you know, and that's not necessarily the case, that you can be literate in finances and be wearing Jordans and, you know, a white tee, you know, kind of getting over the stigma of like what finances and what a financial person looks like, or who the people that know finances are only white and, you know, come from money. Like, no, it doesn't have to be the case. And so I think,
that's important. Just being in the industry, that's huge, you know, because again, it's like, it's the role model aspect. Like I know for myself, like, I think it was until maybe like, I don't even think we even had any like black teachers when we were at O'Day, but like, I never had. I guess Lumpkin had Lumpkin. How can I forget Coach? But like, I mean, that's a difference, that's Pete, you know, but like for me, I think that was, you know, he was my first black teacher. And like, just that aspect too, where it's just like, I didn't even start thinking about financial stuff until my brother got into it. And I was like, why is he all about this? Like, is this like, isn't it's like white people stuff? Like,
that's sad. That's why we, that's how we think. That's how we
it
think.
It is.
Yeah. And it kind of goes hand in hand with my thought process behind that question in terms of ways to like really, you know, obviously it's the knowledge piece, but it's how do you convey this knowledge? How do you get this knowledge to the people in a way that they can digest and relate to? That's the biggest piece right there, because I can sit here and talk finances down people's throats, but I might not be talking to a way that they can understand. You got to understand your audience. And I know that, you know, as African-Americans, you know, we like to have fun. We like to kick it. We like to party. That's a part of the game. Not always, but in a lot of cases, it's like, how do you find a way to make this the norm? We have to normalize this type of conversation. Just like you were saying, like, oh, that's white people stuff. Like, that's a very normal mindset for us. How do we get to the normal mindset of like, that's what we should be talking about? Why ain't we talking about that? I mean, YG has a bar that I literally heard the other day when he was just like, he's like, I got money that I won't spend. And if you ask why, because the white folks don't, like, on big bank, take little bank, like little stuff like that. That's just a small, funny example. But, but we need to be having those normal conversations where it's like, you know, Financial Friday, you know, let's talk coffee and credit. Let's go, you know, host these seminars. And, you know, me and Sean, you know, when this COVID thing, obviously that throws a wrench in the game right now. But my goal is to get out there and show my face and get out into the field, start hosting seminars, maybe renting out Airbnbs and having like a casual sit down where it's like we're having conversations like this. But it's about all the same things that we're talking about. But we're inviting new people to the table and giving them the opportunity to tap into it. That's the type of stuff we want to do.
That's why I teamed up with this guy, though. You see that?
That's the type of stuff where I think is that knowledge piece. But again, it's how do you convey the knowledge to your audience in a way that they can relate to and understand?
There's so much opportunity out there. And again, like the financial literacy, establishing yourself as a business, like being your own brand, I think is... It's the future. If we really want to get everyone out of this, it's like, that should be a requirement for high school. Again, like this is the planning that's required. And I will say this, like I haven't personally met with a financial advisor because my brother is technically one. I've asked him questions and because of my doing my own individual entrepreneur stuff, I've created the time to follow and listen to financial advisors to like do that research game.
Yeah.
And I will let everyone know firsthand, it's the most important thing you can do. It's the most important way to play the game in terms of just setting a game, like a blueprint and a game plan for your future success. Incredibly important.
Period.
Incredibly important.
Period.
This has been powerful stuff, yo.
Super powerful.
So
I really enjoyed this.
I didn't get a touch on your guys' real like connection. Like how did you guys first establish yourselves as like, oh yeah, let's mutually help each other out in this industry. How did that come about?
Sean had brushed on it briefly when he brought up one of my best friends, Miles Long. Yeah. So he had reached out to Miles Long. Oh, you know Miles too?
Yeah, okay. That's what I was wondering. I was like, how did it start? I know you said connected.
That's my guy. So it's like I always knew a Sean, but we never were like close in the sense that we like straight up had, you know, face-to-face conversations. It was kind of at a distance relationship, mutual connections at O'Day and whatnot. And, you know, Sean starting off his business and reaching out, one of the first steps is to reach out to your sphere of influence. And he's reaching out to his people, reaching out to his peeps and talking about financial literacy and whatnot. And then I believe that Miles kind of made the conscious connection in the sense that this is what you're trying to do. This is what my guy is into. One of my best friends, like, let me just, you know, call to Gary and I'm sure he can give you some insights or just kind of share his experience and just see what's up type of thing. And Sean did it. And ever since he did, we immediately met up. And then again, we kind of seen the bigger picture of what we're trying to do here. And I realized too, that's a big part of my why is that it's bigger than me. It really, really is. And if I didn't realize that it was bigger than me, then I would say it would be a lot harder to be showing up every single day and to be giving my all if I just thought it was all about me. Like it's bigger than me and it's bigger than us. And I think that we kind of realized that early. So that's kind of how it got started. And really, we just been trying to, you know, steel sharpens shield, however you want to say that. We just been trying to build off of each other and just grow and develop. Every single time we meet, we want to add value to each other. Every single time we meet, we want to hold each other accountable. And then we also have the opportunity, just like Sean said, to share business with each other. And that's another part of the game based off of relationships is being able to share business with each other when you can eat at the same table, not just because I'm trying to get my guy money, but because he's actually providing value for people. And that's the mentality that you have to get into. And that's the mentality that I realize a lot of business people have is they all eat off of each other, you know, and that's something that I didn't really understand until I started getting into the business. So that's kind of where we're at. And then Sean, obviously anything you want to add on to that?
And covered it pretty good. I mean, just covered it pretty good. A lot of people just say like, you know, yeah, I do everything by myself, like all solo, like all, like, you know, all me, which is like, props to you. But like, it's really nice to have Gary in my corner as I'm kind of starting this new thing. And I bet you'll probably say the same, but it's been nice to know, like, you know, Gary's in my corner. He's going through the same shit that I'm going through, too. And so it's just like, guys, keep grinding. Yeah. And it's nice to know, like, you know, we're to have some process and idea, hear his thoughts, hear his input on it. Like, oh, maybe try saying it this way. You know, we've been doing some recording together too, and just kind of thinking like, you know, just is someone going to, you know, value this, you know, and having a, having the actual ear to give me like some real feedback has been nice.
Ooh, that's huge. Real feedback. That, you know, that type of accountability is one of the things that you lack when you try to do everything yourself. And I think that because obviously it's like, you know, in the beginning of like the business, that's how obviously I wanted to start. I'm like, oh yeah, I got this. Let's try to do all these things. But it's like, just how and like organically develop in terms of like the networks and communities you build. And I think that's something that's so important nowadays is uplifting everyone. Like it's the rising tide lifts all ships type of ideology, is that when we have that community and you can refer people to one another, like that's a huge way to just get everyone out of poverty, get everyone this opportunity of conscious choices where you're financially liberated from loans, debt, whatever it is. But because these are how we reveal these hidden gems. You know, for myself personally, like my journey of growth is fundamentally like founded upon, you know, each person is a piece of the puzzle. Like no one person is, you know, a perfect being. You know, we're each born with this unique light that we're supposed to be shining, but we can only shine it when we actually be ourselves. And when you tap in with people, like I say this all the time, you know, real recognizes real. When you harmonize and resonate with the people that are already on that real grind, like that right there is the piece of the puzzle. So it's like these types of conversations, it's like it's exponential growth. And because it's mutually beneficial, and just having this type of like dialogue and discourse, I find is already going to have more people. Hopefully both y'all will be getting more calls from this. But I think it's one of those things where it's going to really wake people up to the importance that, you know, oh, someone that looks like me is doing this. So someone that's my age is talking about this. Oh, and they're saying they wish they knew this like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I got something real quick. I just want to make this clear in terms of what I do, because I feel like after all this, some people will still be like, so what does he actually do? Like, what is a loan officer doing? That's not to no fault of their own. You know, it's not something that you hear or talk about often. No. But as a loan officer or a loan consultant, we are the people who help provide the financial backing for you to get your home. We essentially qualify you. We take you through that process of what we call pre-approved, pre-qualified, and then pre-approved to be able to say, hey, yeah, this person checks out to be able to borrow X amount of dollars from the company. From the company I work for is called Caliber Home Loans. We specialize in home loans specifically, so we're one of the best at what we do. But a lot of people don't understand that, yeah, you have a real estate agent, but all your real estate agent is going to do is going to send you to me to get pre-approved so then he or she can go hunt for a home with you. That's literally how the process works. And if you ask me, they should. I think a lot of times if people came to a loan officer first, they would kind of negate the process a little bit and they would speed it up and they would get the knowledge they need up front without outside influence or you know, talking to ears. Get what they need, and then they can make that connection to if they want to go with a real estate agent, you know, come get pre-approved with me, see what you need, see what you qualify at, and then go out on a hunt. So that's what I do. You're going to need a financial officer or a loan officer to get a home loan unless you're buying your house cash, period. If you're not buying your house cash, then you will need a financial officer or a loan officer a loan officer to be able to get funded for your house. So I just wanted to make that clear. No confusion, you know, that type of thing. Cause yeah, people end up going to get a house and then it'll be like, oh yeah, Gary, what do you do again? You'd be like, oh man, you know, you could have came to your boy, right?
No, that's a good point though, Gary, about the pre-approval. Cause a lot of the people that I talk to, they're saying, you know, almost 8 out of 10, I'll say 8 out of 10 people I talk to when I'm asking them, you know, what are your goals? You know, they're always like home, want to be a homeowner. And then I'm asking, you know, do you know how much you're approved for? No, don't know. But they already have conversations with an agent. So one, bad diligence on whoever the agent is.
Yeah.
But also, just by talking with Gary and you having the conversations with the seller, you'll have a little more leverage. Again, it's a hot market right now, but you'll just have a little more leverage as well, because now as a seller, I know that Gary's ready to move. He's already been approved. Like the money is accessible. It's just a matter of making a call and it's going to get to me, as opposed to, yeah, Gary's in the entry. He's interested in it. He thinks he's approved for 450. Yeah, he's going to get it.
You're at it.
Like, yeah. What? Like there's 10 other people that are applying for this home, you know, they're bidding for this home. So getting approved is big, is really big. And then it's free. Honestly, you may find out you won't even need the agent. But the agent, though, plays a role in terms of creating the relationships. Maybe they're able to find a home that's not on the market yet. You know, maybe they're able to get you an exclusive showing because they know the seller. So that is why you want to, again, have a connection with the agent. But that's why it's all connected. That, again, we could all be eating at the table. Every party brings value in the situation. So, yeah.
Ooh, that's a huge point right there. And actually, you know, that's a really interesting concept because I didn't even think about that in terms of like cutting out the middleman, where it's like, if you know exactly what you want, where you want to go, what you like, really, you have that vision set, you could just skip the process and do it yourself. And that's actually really empowering because you got to think like gentrification and all the impacts of just like redlining, redistricting, and how they like to shaft people depending on stuff. You know, there are those sketchy people out there. Not everyone, obviously. I know some good real estate agents, but you know, the fact that does exist, that is giving people the power to like choose their own future. I just agree. Right there.
Totally agree.
That's dope.
Yeah. And the pre-approval is free. I'm just letting people know that because a lot of people get scared like, to get pre-approved. I don't want to. All we do is, so a pre-qualification is when we take all of your financial information and I can tell you about what you qualify for just based off a 20-minute conversation about you telling me how much money you make, how much debt you have, what your credit score is, and how much savings you have. You give me all that information right there, I can tell you straight up about how much house you can afford roughly. Now, that's a pre-qualification. A pre-approval is once you actually get into the system and input all of your information, and then we have an expert run your information and verify all of your information. Yeah. So you told me you made 80K, let's check them pay statements and make sure that you actually make 80K. And that's the whole process of making sure that you can actually pay back this money that you'll get loaned. So pre-approval, the only thing that we would do that would impact you in any way is a hard pull on your credit score. So that's the only thing. And even then, if you have relatively decent credit, it will only affect your credit 3 to 5 points. So only 3 to 5 points, and then it will rebound after like 90 days. So literally, just because you get pre-approved doesn't mean you have to buy a house at all. There's no commitment. It's again just finding out how much house you can afford. So I just like to make that clear because I think it can be scary. Like it sounds scary.
How long does that pre-approval last, Gary, for the people?
The pre-approval, well, it can last quite a bit, actually. It depends on the situation, but like a pre-approval letter lasts about a month, but you can be, you know, pre-qualified or pre-approved for months on end. It could be like three months before it actually gets to the point where you need to reapply.
Wow. And even that right there is just that. I mean, again, it's just all about offering the free information. It's like you may not even have an idea of what you want yet, but just getting a ballpark of what you can look for is huge just to get people in that mindset.
It gets you looking in the right direction, right? Otherwise, you're like, where do I look, right? It gets you focused on a goal.
Well, it's the mutual beneficial game here. And I think that's something that I hope can ease the tensions that a lot of people have with this is that it's like, yo, they have your best interest in mind because it helps them out. Like fundamentally.
No, exactly. We're connected at the hip. Nothing that we do, if the client feels a loss or faces a loss in any brokerage accounts, that hurts us at the end of the day. And then on the defensive end, the unsexy topic about the life insurance, like, wouldn't you much rather have like a DI policy in the event that Peter breaks his leg or he has laryngitis or whatever and he can't speak anymore? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to say, hey, Sean, I can't talk, I can't go to work, and be able to have, money coming month to month, as opposed to having nothing at all in place? You know, would you spend $40 a month on something like that? Probably, you know? And so just like, again, showing them like what it is and showing them that it's really not that expensive, in terms of what you want it to do. But yeah, just showing that like the barrier of entry is not as daunting as one may have thought.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
No, that's an excellent point. And it comes into the realistic, because again, you know, for those listeners, maybe you're in sales, maybe you're not. One of the things I gained from sales experience is getting to paint the picture to have someone understand where it's like, look at what the obtaining versus the minimal investment and cost of this like initial breakthrough. Like, so for like $40 a month, that could be life-changing. Don't go out to Starbucks, don't go out to eat. What, twice?
Yeah,
there it is right there.
literally. That's like two teriyaki meals, or you know, that's pho in a Red Robin's meal on DoorDash. Like, come on.
Or even more intense, you got to think like, I mean, probably like pre-corona life for the comparison, but I know quite a few people that were dropping like stacks every weekend just on alcohol.
Hundreds. Easily, but people like, don't think
two drinks, bro.
I could easily spend 150 on
a night. Look at Sean, he was like, I was one of them. I was
just the glasses,
too. Since COVID, we made some adjustments, you know, But yeah, that's like, you make some good points, great points. And, you know, or we could work a little harder at work, make a little more bread.
Get a little more
bread. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Get the side hustle, do make anything. Like, again, like there's so much opportunity. I actually utilize these systems where I really hope that like these types of conversations happen more, because hopefully it just inspires people to actually do their due diligence and get in the game. Mm-hmm. Realize it's never too late. But I guess I actually got to correct myself, because I have not seen a financial advisor per se in terms of the field, but for my business, I did have an accountant. I have a personal accountant. I don't have one anymore, because my role with that accountant for like the first like year and a half, 2 years of my business was, I want you to teach me everything that I need to know to do this on my own, because I'm going to have to train someone to do this at some point when I expand this business. Mm-hmm. So he just like sat me down. We've had a few meetings every now and then, taught me how to do all the taxes and filings, all the different loopholes and things that are legal. You know, they're legal laws and regulations. So it's like,
yeah,
that to me, I will say, so I should correct myself. That has probably been one of the most beneficial conversations I've had in my life. And Exactly. And it's like right there where it's like just teaching me all the different things for the business of what is an expense, what is taxable, what is a refund, you know, to the grants and all the different opportunities. And then again, like you got to think how that's impacting my wife and helping us out in our joint tax returns. You know what I mean? Like there's so much you can do yourself when you actually know which forms to fill out. And it's just a form. It's just a form saying, oh yeah, I do this. Oh, you're no longer eligible for this, like for this tax. Cool, sweet, thanks.
Knowledge is power.
A lot of convolution in the process. I don't like it, but yeah.
And just when I thought this conversation couldn't get any more insightful, and just so many wisdom nuggets sprinkled in throughout there, I just got to say thank you guys again so much for joining us with the after show. And we're at that point now where we can roll the outro.
That concludes this episode of Creatives Chat. Thank you for watching. Join us every Thursday at 3:33 p.m. Pacific Daily Time as creative minds get together and chat about who knows what. View more episodes on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks again to our sponsors for making this show possible. Thank you, LoyaltyGutterServices.com and WeAreHistorically.com. Conscious Human Apparel.
Hi, I'm Darius Wilrich. I'll teach you everything you need to know about playing jazz piano like a pro with my 12-week online video course and downloadable guidebook, Jazz Piano Pro Essentials. Enroll today at jazzpianopro.com.
Thanks for joining us.